from St. Louis Public Radio. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. I'm Jason Rosenbaum. Is it possible for something to be unusual and familiar at the same time? Well, in some respects, the 2025 legislative session encapsulates that admittedly paradoxical concept. Unlike the last couple of years, Republicans generally got along with each other and passed much of Governor Mike Kehoe's agenda. But to approve two measures to counteract voter-approved paid sick leave and abortion measures, Senate Republicans needed to use what's known as the previous question to shut down Democratic filibusters. And then the Senate adjourned on Wednesday, while the House called it quits on Thursday for the first time in years. With Democratic senators promising procedural retribution, it may be a good time to bring in St. Louis Public Radio State House and politics reporter Sarah Kellogg to discuss how the end of this unusual week may lead to less fruitful legislative sessions in the future. Sarah, welcome back to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, Jason. As always, it's good to be back.
So I thought it was an unusual legislative session. Did you also find it different from the others you covered?
You know, I really did. And up until the last week or half or so, I would say this session is probably the calmest one I've covered. And this is my fourth session. And the biggest difference I saw was, you know, less of a, you know, fractions and fictions in the Republican and the Republicans in the Senate, as well as more cooperation between the Senate and House as a whole. And we'll get to how all of that ended, I'm sure. But it ultimately did lead to more legislation passing compared to last year. 67 bills passed this year, which is 51 of those were non-appropriations. Compare that to 46 last year. That's 20 more bills.
You mentioned this, but a less covered subplot revolved around how the Freedom Caucus and the Senate actually worked with Senate leadership instead of being, and excuse the pejorative here, just straight up obstructionists. How do you think that affected harmony within the Senate GOP caucus and with House and Senate relations?
You know, I think it meant more bills got through. You know, I was kind of racking my brain this morning, and I can't really think of an issue where members of the Freedom Caucus delayed or stopped a bill for hours on end because they wanted something else passed. You know, last year there were hours-long holdups on gubernatorial appointments, as well as the federal reimbursement allowance, which funds roughly one-third of Medicaid in the state. You know, the FRA filibuster actually briefly broke the filibuster record before Democrats took back a couple weeks late, you know, later. This year, I can't think of a similar situation. So I think that led to a more united Republican Party this year and for more bills to go through.
I saw Governor Kehoe walk through the halls of the Capitol's third floor multiple times over the last week of session. First of all, was that common throughout the year? And how do you think his personal charm offensive on legislators helped pass elements of his agenda?
You know, I can't really say how common it was, as I was either in the House or the Senate during those walks.
Fair enough.
At a press conference last Friday, Kehoe said he made a point to visit with lawmakers throughout session. I think it showed that he was more involved while session was ongoing compared to his predecessor, Governor Mike Parson. And, you know, I think it did help. His number one priority was a bill that had numerous provisions related to police as well as public safety. Kind of the big headline of that one is it included placing the St. Louis Police Department under a state board. And that was the first bill passed, and it was passed in mid-March. That's very early for something to make it through both chambers. So, you know, I do think it made a difference.
It wasn't all sunshine and roses, though. State Representative LaDonna Applebaum wrote on Facebook, "Please tell us the story of the elevator ride with House Majority Leader Alex Riley. You had me in tears." So what the representative is referring to is how I told the House Majority Leader, "Saw you on TV yesterday, must have been filmed before Friday." And that was when he was doing a television interview about how the budget went well this year, and it was clearly filmed before a capital improvement bill surprisingly went down in flames. How did that affect the last week of session, that that bill did not make it over the finish line?
You know, I think it had a pretty big effect. For some context, the bill in question was House Bill 19, and it was just one vote away in the House from going to Governor Kehoe. And without telling House Democrats or the Senate at all, House Republicans, namely Budget Chair Dirk Deaton, did not bring that bill up for a vote. They skipped it. And Deaton says he made that move because he felt the budget was just getting too big for the year. And for context, House Bill 19 was roughly $500 million. That did not go over well in the Senate, especially with Senator Lincoln Huff, who's the Appropriations Chair in the Senate. He spoke on the floor with with other senators about the consequences of not passing that budget bill. It was going to fund projects all over the state, including money for several hospitals as well as for cancer research. And then the House passed legislation to improve slash fund stadiums for the Kansas City Chiefs and Royals that could cost hundreds of billions of dollars, and sent that to the Senate, where that went over pretty much like a lead balloon. Huff noted the hypocrisy of not funding 19 but being willing to fund for that stadium. So, you know, no bills passed the Senate on Monday. I think that was a consequence of 19. And that's that stadium bill did not pass, which I think was a direct consequence of that.
And some listeners like Joni Hosher wrote, how can the Republicans in Missouri ignore the will of the people, this time abortion, but also conceal carry, right to work, expanding Medicaid? Those are just off the top of my head. Oh, yeah, paid sick leave. So what she's referring to is how the previous question, which ends Democratic filibusters in the Senate, were used to pass a measure repealing elements of Proposition A on the paid sick leave requirements and to put something else on the ballot to repeal and replace an abortion rights constitutional amendment that voters approved in 2024. What are Republicans saying when they're passing these bills overriding voter approved initiatives?
So obviously I'll preface by saying I'm not a Republican lawmaker, but I think there's two talking points from the House and Senate Republicans on this issue. One is that voters didn't know what they were voting for when they voted for Amendment 3 in Proposition A back in November. And once they saw how these measures would be implemented practically, that some regretted their vote. Is that a possibility for some voters? I'm sure. When you only have the ballot summary, the nitty gritty of what the amendment or statutes actually do are more complicated and not on the ballot. We've talked about that with sports betting. You know, I want to note that some Republicans, like Speaker of the House John Patterson, does not subscribe to that idea. He thinks voters knew exactly what they were voting for. And that kind of leads to the other talking point, which is that, yes, the voters passed Amendment 3 and Proposition A, and Republicans are putting forth a new option for voters to decide to pass or fail on Amendment 3. Or in the Proposition A situation, you know, they repealed sick leave and future wage increases beginning in 2027, but they kept in place the $15 an hour minimum wage increase in 26. So their argument is that it's a compromise. I don't know if Missourians will see it that way, you know, months later to repeal something in part that the voters approved of. But I think those are two kind of the arguments that you see.
Senate Democrats say they plan to tie the chamber into procedural gridlock over the previous question on those two measures. Do you think they'll follow through? And if so, how?
I don't think we're going to have to wait long to see if they'll follow through, because we're likely going to have a special session in the following month. But the anger from Senate Democrats was really palpable last Wednesday. And there's a lot someone can do to throw sand in the gears and bring the Senate down to a crawl. That could be objecting motions that kind of go by normally, to filibuster any bill, any motion that goes through. You know, I think that we've seen it before, not used, you know, kind of step by step by Republican or by Democrats, but by members of the former conservative caucus. But, you know, I look, and also in addition to that, I look at the voting tallies for the budget this year. And if I removed all of the I votes from Democrats, a lot of budget bills would not pass. And so I think that could be something that comes up next year as well.
Sarah Kellogg is St. Louis Public Radio State House and politics reporter. Sarah, thank you for coming back on the show. And more importantly, thank you for your stellar work along with star intern Evie Lewis for all session long providing us with the information they needed to know. So I appreciate you.
Absolutely. I'm going to brag on myself and say it was definitely a dream team between me and Evie. So thanks so much. And I guess till next year or till next month, huh?
Until next month. When we come back, we'll continue our review of the 2025 legislative session with State Representatives Ian Mackey and Jim Murphy. This is the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air. When Governor Mike Kehoe held his end-of-session press conference, he urged reporters and Missourians to examine the 2025 legislative session in its entirety rather than just the chaotic final days. And he also said he understood why Democrats were not happy with what happened last week.
Yeah, it's part of what the how this building works. People also are people. They have emotions, right? And so sometimes it hits a raw nerve, and time and relationship building is usually the thing that cures that. I don't want to make that sound easy or simple or a snap of a finger, because it's certainly not. But it will take a little bit of rebuilding of some relationships, and I know that folks from both parties and both sides of the building will work hard to try to rebuild those relationships.
Joining us now to assess whether legislators can really get along in subsequent sessions are State Representatives Ian Mackey and Jim Murphy. Mackey represents Missouri's 99th House District, which takes in Clayton, Ledoux, Olivet, and Warson Woods. Representative, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Murphy represents Missouri's 94th House District, which takes in portions of South St. Louis County. Representative, welcome to the Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
Now, before we get into what happened in the legislature, I do want to ask both of you if you think there will need to be any state legislative actions in response to the tornadoes, even if it's just like appropriating extra money that could reimburse municipalities or utility companies. And I know this is a very speculative question and we're only 3 days out, but I do want to ask while both of you are here. Representative Murphy.
Well, actually, you know, the stories you're hearing, we're finding out that our government has responsibilities. And this is no different than what happened out in California when they had the fires. Yeah, because now we have a situation where we have mass destruction. And, you know, what are we going to do to rebuild? And, you know, the stories I'm hearing is the red tape now is going to become a real issue. And we have let that red tape grow and grow and grow over a period of time. A good example is I was fortunate enough in November to decide I wanted to have a whole house generator put in. And it took me 3 months to get a permit to do it. If that's going to happen on the rebuilding end of this, and I'm sure it will because it's, you know, we have let this monster grow, it's a real problem. My electrical contractor told me today he's had 100 calls wanting these generators put in now because of what people have gone through.
Now, Representative Mackey, you mentioned to me you're still without power in your house in Clayton or your condo in Clayton.
Yeah, our apartment, yep.
How do you think local, state, and federal officials have handled the response to the storm? And what do you, I can't say I disagree with Representative Murphy that like how things go forward, especially with the federal government's response, is going to be really critical here.
Right. Yeah, I was glad to see Governor Kehoe step in and, you know, invite FEMA and declare a disaster, seek federal aid. My understanding is that they're going to do a damage assessment, FEMA is, on Wednesday. Yeah, people are ready to fill out their applications right now. You know, I hope that this isn't a case of the federal government dragging their feet. Obviously, with $1 billion worth of damage, that's not something the city or any city can shoulder on its own. It's going to need, obviously, a lot of federal support and probably some state support. And I certainly agree with, you know, what we can do to cut red tape. You know, we did leave $1 billion close to it, I think, on the table sure. When it comes to finances. But I think cutting red tape is also something that we're going to have to do as well.
All right. Do you have anything else to add on that point?
Yeah, another thing we have to be very cautious of is the people are going to be out here taking advantage of people. For example, I had an inspector come out, and he was kind of a strange dude. And when I checked him out, he had a criminal background. And I'm going, you know, they're sending out, you know, people that haven't been background checked, and they're roaming our neighborhoods. You know, we as a government, we need to be looking at that and making sure that our citizens aren't being taken advantage of.
And there certainly are examples of reputable contractors who, you know, may have committed crimes 30 years ago and have repaid their debt to society.
Oh, absolutely.
So I want to make that clear. But it could be people who have, like, recently ripped people off.
Right,
or
and
something.
There's going to be gypsy crews coming in now that we have no idea who they are. And they're not going to be looking out for our citizens. We need to do that for them.
All right, let's move to what the legislature did and didn't do this year. Representative Murphy, how would this session compare to prior years?
Oh, I think the session was incredibly successful. You know, we passed some great education reforms. We passed one of my favorite, of course, was my baby box program, which we got funding for from the state that is actually saving lives. It's moved very smoothly. I think the Democrats, Republicans both feel like we got to debate good, solid legislation on the floor. You know, there's a couple of controversial things that went out there, but we weren't consumed by it like we have in the past. And the Senate wasn't consumed with it as they were in the past. So we actually got things accomplished. We didn't always agree on everything, but I think it was overall a very good session.
Representative Mackey, it did seem that the lack of infighting among Republicans may have put Democrats at a disadvantage. How was your caucus able to deal with that reality?
You know, I think on the House side, I really agree with Jim in terms of just the general sense and feeling on the House side. To me, after having been there for 7 years, this was the best of those 7 years on our side of the building. Like Representative Murphy said, we did not have fights for the sake of having fights. Every year I've been there, we've had a floor leader who would bring up a bill just so we could spend 2 or 3 hours debating abortion or trans kids or something, you know, that he knew was going to divide everybody, get everybody mad, you know, lock people in until 10 or 11 o'clock at night just to have the fight, just to get clips, just to make people angry. We didn't do any of that. We debated legislation that we disagreed on, but legislation that historically has divided Republicans and Democrats, right?
Sure.
ESA, school vouchers. That's something Democrats and Republicans should be debating. There's merit to both sides of the point of view, and that's what we spent our time doing in the House, and I'm glad we did.
So while there did seem to be less House and Senate friction as a whole, the decision not to pass HB 19, the capital improvements bill, seemed to leave a bad taste in a lot of senators' mouths. I'm sure Representative Murphy, you heard heavy criticism of senators, of House Budget Chairman Dirk Deaton for not putting that bill forward. Was it the right move?
Well, 18, 19, 20 wasn't even brought up in the committee by the Senate until Wednesday of the week, final week. We told them early on, you had this bill since the 7th of April. You know, let's get it through committee so we can talk about any changes and so forth. They purposely delayed it and sent it over to us with an extra $110 million to added to it 2 hours before the end of the day, and they adjourned, giving us no chance to take it to a conference.
Now, Senator Huff said some of that additional money came from House member requests. Is that true?
No.
It's not true?
What they put on the floor was not anything we told them to put on.
Okay. Well, I to play devil's advocate, you know, the legislature has passed a major tax cut, and the economy may be heading into a downturn. Representative Mackey, do you think the House's decision here may have actually been a blessing in disguise?
No, I don't think so. And I don't think the folks across the state relying on those capital improvements that desperately need to happen are thinking the same either. You know, investments in our state are incredibly important. And the folks who are relying on that are now left in the dark because of political infighting between the House and Senate. I don't think that's a blessing in disguise. I think to address our shortfalls in the future, we have to be more responsible when it comes to how we handle our taxes. And we can't just continue to follow the route of Kansas and brown back ourselves into oblivion and cut, and then wake up surprised that we don't have any money.
Do you have a response to that?
Well, I would say this, that the bottom line is a little over $1.2 billion now. If we'd have passed 19, it would have been well under $1 billion with an economic situation coming down the road where that money's going to be needed. And, you know, we're trying to protect that bottom line. And we made that perfectly clear from day one with the Senate that we weren't going to be railroaded because it's a trend that they've set. And there is some time or another that you have to put your foot down and say, enough is enough. This was it. I believe that the governor is going to bring us back for a special. We're going to renew some of those things, and I think we should. But helter-skelter spending is just something that we shouldn't be doing.
We'll be following that more when the governor does his special session call. But I do want to move on to the reaction to the GOP-controlled legislature taking aim at Proposition A and Amendment 3. And we got a lot of comments like this from that sailor girl on Instagram who wrote, I am not forgiving or forgetting that this gerrymandered GOP legislature has managed to reverse or scuttle every proposition victory of Mo voters in the last two decades. I am furious with them and tired of them sabotaging the two Democratic cities at every turn while taking our money. Now, I want to make it clear, the legislature has not overridden every proposition that has been done. As far as I know, we're not revoting on sports betting, even though that only passed by like 1,000 votes. But Representative Murphy, what do you think of your party? Do you think your party's going to face a backlash for what they did?
We might. But, you know, I don't think I make decisions based on what voters will punish me for. I have to base it based on what I think is the right thing to do. When it comes to Proposition A, Every business in my community came to me crying that this is going to hurt us. It's going to cost jobs. It's going to possibly run us out of business. It was just overly done. Nobody thought it through. And I don't believe that the voters have the responsibility of knowing everything that could possibly happen if they vote for this. It sounded very good. I think probably we should look at some legislation to do that, but do it in a responsible way. This was just way too broad. We needed to do something about it. The minimum wage was not an issue. We didn't touch that. So that was something that I felt like we needed to do because our process is long and drawn out. Our debates are long and drawn out. We vet bills in many, many ways, whether it be committee, on the floor, when it goes to the Senate, when it comes back. You know, the initiative petition process is not nearly thorough enough. And sometimes we make mistakes. We make them as a legislature. We'll pass bills that need to be fixed. This was a bill I believe needed to be fixed, and we did.
So, Representative Mackey, I have heard a lot from business groups about how small businesses felt like they were being overwhelmed by the sick leave requirements. Was there a way to possibly make it easier for them? Or do you think that it was just impossible for Democrats to get behind it because they've latched onto this idea that any voter-approved initiative needs to be respected, even if they don't like it?
Well, it could be. You know, I think a lot of the negotiations did deal with the size of business. I think that was a big sticking point to determine, you know, to what extent is a burden too great for a business of a certain size. I mean, I think that's really what a lot of folks in the Senate on both parties were trying to figure out. No, I'm not somebody that thinks we need to respect the will of voters no matter what. Why? Because we have a ban on gay marriage in the Constitution from 2004 passed by 70% of Missourians. No. I agree with
you. Wouldn't have been able to get married under that.
Absolutely. And you know what? If I had the opportunity to overturn that 2 days later as a legislature, you bet you I would. So it's not that simple. And no, I don't think friends like Representative Murphy and other Republicans are going to face consequences as long as voters can have their cake and eat it too. You go back to 1999, we said no to concealed carry. You go back decades, puppy mills. You can go through the list. What happened? Did they face consequences? No. There were people on my street that had yard signs up that said yes on three, vote for Mike Kehoe for governor. Did that make sense to me? Absolutely not. But as long as folks can have their cake and eat it too, I think this is the state we're in. We're in this doom loop where we continue to have proposition after proposition. People get rich off them. They put them on the ballot. They make money off them. The consultants go away happy. And then we just keep this loop going.
I do want to talk about the measure that would seek to repeal and replace Amendment 3. And I want to focus on one thing that I don't think has gotten as much of attention, but it's a provision that bans things like gender transition surgery and hormone therapy for minors, which is already illegal under state law. I understand that there is a sunset on it, and there was a bill to try to remove it that didn't end up getting passed. But why was that language in the amendment since it's not allowed for most cases right now?
Well, first of all, we're not overturning Amendment 3. I mean, we're giving the voters another choice. I think Representative Sykes, when he closed on the floor debate, I think put it right, that when we did 126, which was the heartbeat bill, that a majority of Missourians felt like maybe it was a little too far. We are a pro-life state. That's well documented, but it went too far. When they got Amendment 3 in front of them, they said, oh, well, this is a way to bring it back. But, and on second read, it's a little bit too much. We've never given them a choice in the middle. And we think now we're giving them a choice in the middle. As far as the transgender part, frankly, I don't know why we're doing that. I think that that's a separate issue that should have been handled separately. And if I don't like mixing the two. But if that's the way the bill came out, that's the way the bill came out.
I do want to ask both of you if you think the ballot summary will stand up to judicial scrutiny. It doesn't mention that most abortions would be banned if this proposal passes, with the exception of rape and incest up to 12 weeks of pregnancy, fatal fetal abnormalities, and medical emergencies. And I also, this may seem like nitpicking, but the bullet point that says it would protect kids against gender transition, that just seems factually inaccurate because if the kid is born intersex, they would still have access to things like gender transition surgery. So Representative Murphy first and then Representative Mackey, do you think the ballot summary is going to survive judicial scrutiny?
I never bet on what the courts will do.
Fair.
I don't believe I've ever I would ever win that bet if I did it. I don't know. You know, I think they'll probably come up with something more centralist, and we'll see how what happens. But I do believe that, you know, when you look at Amendment 3, it only passed by 1.3%. I think this is going to be a very different election when it comes out, and who's going to punish me? Which half of the 50%? I don't know.
Well,
yeah, I'm sure it'll be rewritten. I sure hope it will be to reflect a more fair representation of what's actually in the ballot language, as is typically the case when these issues go to the ballot.
Do you think that Amendment 3, as is now, will survive this challenge? Like, I do know from talking with people that the anti-abortion rights sentiment is really strong among everyday people because they feel that abortion is morally wrong. I know that Amendment 3 passed, but Representative Murphy is right that it was pretty close. How do you think that amendment that was passed last year will fare when it gets another shot in 2026?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I'm old enough to remember passing Clean Missouri, and then 2 years later, same electorate, obviously, but voters across the state who put Clean Missouri in, I think in 2018, turned around in 2020, took it right back out. So, I think the same thing could happen here. Obviously, the trans language is ballot candy that's meant to get people's attention. What I think is going to happen is this isn't going to be an issue from the folks who are putting it on the ballot and wanting it to pass. It's not going to be about abortion. You're not going to see ads saying 12 weeks or abortion is murder, or, trying to convince people to be pro-life who aren't. What it's going to say is trans kids, trans kids, trans kids. That's what the ad's going to be from these folks.
30 seconds left. You guys are going to be coming back into special session to talk about the Chiefs and the Royals. Do you think that the harsh feelings we alluded to earlier are going to make it hard to pass? Representative Murphy.
I certainly hope not. I think this is an issue that, and we had discussed it earlier, there's really two sides to this. One's a political side and one's an economic side. Economically, it makes sense for us to do this. Politically, it's a terrible vote for us to take. But the economics matter.
Representative Mackey.
It's going to be a hell of a fight. I hope we can get it done. But I don't think people's feelings have evaporated since we adjourned.
No. Well, Representatives Ian Mackey and Representative Jim Murphy, thank you so much for being here today. And you're both term limited after this year.
That's right. We both have senioritis.
So you all have senioritis. Thank you for joining
thank
us
you.
Today.
The Politically Speaking Hour on St. Louis on the Air is produced by Jason Rosenbaum, Alex Hoyer, Emily Woodbury, Danny Wisentowski, Maya Norfleet, and Elaine Cha.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.